Hello and welcome to the EMG Health Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Jonathan Sakia, and today it's just me. No guest, just me. My thoughts and a microphone. Like all healthcare practitioners, I had to go through a detailed and lengthy educational process to prepare me for a lifetime of learning. Because today I'm going to be talking about the topic of medical education and how doctors obtain this as they aim to keep themselves sharp so they can stay up to date, scratch that urge to learn itch, and of course, best serve their patients. You know, we were told that 50% of what we learned in medical school will, in 5 years, be proven incorrect. They just didn't tell us which half. And if you graduated as long ago as me, by the laws of diminishing returns, most of what I learned is now proven to be incorrect. Well, maybe not incorrect, just not relevant anymore. As a surgical trainee, for instance, I spent a lot of time learning how to do truncal vagotomy to treat peptic ulcer. And because that causes gastric paralysis, we also had to do pyloroplasty to improve gastric emptying. So then we learned selective and then highly selective vagotomy to avoid the need to change the gastric plumbing. And we learned how to do a gastrectomy, remove the stomach, Billroth 1, Billroth 2. Now? Now we treat ulcers with antibiotics because we know that they're caused by a microorganism, Helicobacter pylori, a bug that we did not know even existed when I was studying surgery. Other changes during my professional lifetime? Well, pick a field. Radiology? CAT scans, MRI, PET scans, SPECT scans, digital subtraction angiography. What about cardiology? Stents, drug-eluting stents, beating heart bypass, minimally invasive valve surgery. Oncology? Apparently, cervical cancer is caused by a virus. And new drugs, lots and lots of new drugs that were not around when I was at medical school. And on and on and on and on. In fact, most of what I learned at medical school is passé, except the most important thing, the love of learning, the desire to learn, the ways to learn. Those remain the same. Okay, to become a doctor, one is at medical school for anywhere between, 4 to 7 years. We learn basic medical science. Well, that hasn't changed much. Yeah, biochemistry, microbiology, and pathology are much more complex. And in truth, I struggled to understand immunology back in the day. Today, I wouldn't have a hope. Check your history books, and you'll know that when human dissection became allowed, and it was apparent that the human pelvis did not look the same as a horse, those who came before us were told that the bones had changed shape due to humans wearing trousers. I think not. Let's look at the methods of taking a clinical history, how to examine a patient, elicit those subtle signs that hint at disease lurking below the surface. Finger clubbing, muscular fasciculations, the BOAS sign, and so on. The art of medicine, and what to me, anyway, makes it enormously satisfying. But those skills are being ridiculed by some with a rush to irradiate with the magic moonbeams. The CAT scan will reveal all, after all. But the laying on of hands, learning how to do that is an essential skill. It teaches a nascent doctor how to bond with a patient. Let's not lose that. Then, of course, there's the acquisition of clinical skills. Serving on the wards as an apprentice to one's senior colleagues, a process embodied in the old joke, watch one, do one, teach one. Of course, nowadays, much more structured than in my day, with clear teaching objectives and seemingly endless evaluations of teacher and student alike. But trust me, in my day, the fear of going on a teaching ward round and disappointing the mighty professor inspired one to read or risk being humiliated. Well, even if you couldn't study, at least have a witty comeback when caught unawares by a probing question. And for a few seconds at least, one felt like a king. And then we enter specialty and even subspecialty training. We go from knowing a little about a lot to a lot about a little. Taken to its logical conclusion, we end up knowing absolutely everything about almost nothing at all. Medical education is so rigorous, of course, because it's complex and literally people's lives are at stake. So the oversight is necessary and sensible. And then after all those years, one is qualified, sanctified, a licensed consultant, attending professor, or whatever title one chooses. But to retain that position and to be honest to our commitment to our patients, we have to commit to continuing medical education. Different laws for each country, region, and sometimes specialty, the principle's the same. Medical science is constantly changing, and we owe our patients a duty of care to provide the most up-to-date, evidence-based care possible. I can't stress that strongly enough. And to do that, we have to stay up-to-date. It's non-negotiable. Whether it be etiology, diagnosis, therapeutic interventions, things are changing. And sometimes, of course, we discover that what we were doing is actually harmful. Remember our oath, primum non nocere, firstly, do no harm. We have to stay current. And without continuing medical education, we would never evolve our way of practicing medicine. And guess what? The science of how we learn is also evolving, and the means of delivering information is changing and growing. We need to ensure that we get the best information in the best possible way and at the best possible time. First, we can and should consult several different sources of information, and one classic component of continuing medical education, CME, is the universe of peer-reviewed articles in medical journals. Different types of articles, whether original research, benchtop, or clinical, meta-analyses, and even case studies. These peer-reviewed, reputably published journal missives are a surefire way to ensure you're keeping up to date, basically, with medical knowledge in your field of interest. And from the other side, doing your bit as a peer reviewer is not only a service to your colleagues, but it's a great way of keeping sharp and at the leading, or should I say, bleeding edge. Educational courses are a great source of furthering and enhancing our medical education as they enable us to dig deeper into a specific topic or area within our specialty. You can be the best doctor in the world, but you'll still need a refresher course from time to time, or a course to explore a new approach or treatment. Of course, during the COVID-19 pandemic, many educational courses have had to resort to being delivered virtually, but it's still critical that these go ahead. You know, something struck me. When we go to conferences, it's not just the keynote lectures, free papers, poster sessions, and symposia we consume. It's the ad hoc conversation, the random chat over a coffee or beer with an old colleague or new friend. We get to run ideas by one another, plan collaborations, compare notes. Those corridor conversations have thus far not been simulated by virtual conference sites. I certainly hope that we can get back to travel soon. I know we all miss it. But if we can't, we have to find a way to recreate those spontaneous interactions. Podcasts like this and webinars have been around for years, but we've seen them both dramatically increase as a result of the pandemic, as face-to-face contact has been hindered. Looking at Zoom, for example, in December 2019, daily virtual meetings were around 10 million. What about April of 2020? 300 million, a 30-fold increase. Webinars are a fantastic way of consuming knowledge from the comfort of your own home or during a lunch break at work, or frankly, whenever and wherever you have the time. Many of these can be watched on demand, which mean they're much more suitable for healthcare practitioners who, let's face it, we all have a hectic schedule and we may struggle to find the time to attend. In fact, registration may prove to be higher than for in-person courses or conferences in the past, if you will. The key thing is to tailor your CME, your continuing educational content, for your needs and keeping that curiosity driving your passion for our profession. You know, I think we're the luckiest people in the world. We're privileged to work in a field that is fascinating, constantly evolving, drives us to better ourselves, and in the process, we save and improve lives. Wow, think about that. Well, That's it from me, Dr. Jonathan Sakia, and I'm going to wrap up my rant for this week. Thank you for listening to today's episode, and please do join me again next Friday for another episode of the EMG Health Podcast. Stay curious, and I want to close by quoting a friend of mine who told me that he aspires to go to bed less dumb every night. What a great goal. Bye for now.